fuck, what the fuck, what the fuck, yoga.
I'm Anna.
Are you?
No, you're Anna.
I am.
Nah.
Oh, are we recording?
Yes.
I didn't know that you hit record.
That's okay, just pause.
Okay. Welcome to What the Fuck Yoga Podcast. I'm your host, Anna.
And I'm your other host, Katie.
This is part two of the history of yoga.
Welcome back. We hope that you had a little time to process all that information from last week.
Digest it, spit it out.
Yep. We have not because it was literally 10 minutes ago.
We're doing this all in one day. My brain hurts.
I'm tired. I don't want to brag, but I was up till 5 a.m. working on this.
And
I think I already bragged about that.
So props to Katie.
Anna still did more work though. I just did mine at the last minute.
Not really, but you know.
I bet you did.
Okay. That's fine.
So did you do any yoga this morning after?
Fuck no, I woke up.
What's your hangover yoga stitch?
What's my hangover yoga stitch?
Yeah, like,
I don't
do it. Okay.
I don't do it. That's my hangover yoga stitch.
I'm never hungover anymore because I'm old and I can't drink at all.
It's pretty rare that, rare-ish.
I can't drink that much. Like if I'll have two drinks
like
and
to.
I'm not feeling good. So
yeah.
I'm done. But
should we tell them how old we are?
Yeah, why not?
I'm 28.
And I'm 27.
What are you? You're not. You're
31.
What did you, like, wait.
You guys can't see Anna right now, but she looked at me like the fucking exorcist. Like, her head just, like, swiveled over to me. Like, you liar.
So you lying sack of shit.
I'm 31. It's not that far off, okay?
For a second, I believed you. I was like, wait a second.
Everything I've ever known about you has been a lie.
Okay. So we're old, basically.
Yeah.
Nah,
but
not
really.
We're not old. We just can't drink like we used to is all we're trying to say.
In terms of alcohol consumption, we are old.
Yeah. Like, I literally had 3 drinks last night.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I lied. 4. I had 4 drinks last night. I'm hungover.
I spread
out over, like, 4 hours, so damn.
Yeah.
Get it together.
Get it together, Anna.
Get it together. I'm not that hungover. I just can't think straight.
And neither can I.
Yeah. But, no, I don't yoga. Back to the original question, I do not yoga when I'm hungover.
Okay.
But Sundays are my day off anyways. I always give myself Sundays off.
Yeah.
So.
That's good.
Yeah.
Good.
What about you? Do you yoga when you're hungover?
Like I said, if I am hungover, I'm not moving. So,
same. Yeah. Okay.
I can't bend over or like child's pose or anything. I'm just like, no, I'm not going
to
do anything.
I used to. When I was younger, I'd like drink, you know, copious amounts of alcohol and then get up and go for a run in the morning.
Seriously?
Oh, yeah. Early 20s.
I never had a hangover in college.
Oh, I definitely had hangovers in college.
I never did. I thought I did one time and it was the flu.
Are you serious?
Yeah. And then it was for like 3 days. I'm like,
oh my God. No, I've gotten hangovers my whole life. They've just progressively gotten worse as I've gotten older, you know? So.
Yeah, we sound like alcoholics.
We do. We're not.
We're not.
No.
But we are going to start having mimosas on the show when I'm not on a juice cleanse.
Freaking-lutely.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And Bloody Marys. I prefer Bloody Marys.
I mean, I have some Baileys in my coffee right now.
What?
No, I'm just
kidding.
You didn't
tell me.
I don't. I do not.
And if you did, I hope you wouldn't tell me because then I'd be even more jealous that I can't have coffee today.
Yeah.
So.
No, unfortunately, there's no Baileys in my coffee. I have to go to work soon, so.
I have to go to work soon.
Yes.
So anyway, just a quick recap of last week. 10 minutes ago, we were talking about the 4 periods of yoga history. So we have the Vedic period, pre-classical, classical, and post-classical.
And we discussed 2 of those 4. So we discussed the Vedic period and the pre-classical period. So taking you back real quickly to the Vedic period, the text for that time was the Rig Veda, and it talked about uniting the physical world with the divine world.
And then in the pre-classical era. In the pre-classical era, the Upanishads and the Bhagavad Gita were compiled. And what they taught is that the self is the same as the universe. So meditating to explore the self can help you understand better the universe and its oneness.
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 Oneness. So yeah, on to bigger and better things.
Here we go.
Here we go.
Buckle up,
ladies. Next period, the classical period.
That's
the third period, 400 CE.
And there are gaps in the time. We don't really have an end date for this. It's just not clean and clear.
They just probably start to blend together.
Yeah.
You know, like any period
right.
of history. It's not like,
this the Middle
Ages
ended.
Yeah, they ended.
1523.
It was just gone. Like, no, it merges.
And then
you know?
We became, I don't know.
I don't even
Victorian.
Know what happened after the Middle Ages.
Edwardian, I don't know.
So the classical period is marked by Patanjali's Yoga Sutras, which I'm sure you've heard of. Maybe not, though. Who knows? I don't know you.
Well, if you've been through yoga teacher training,
you've definitely
probably chanted these without knowing what the fuck they are.
I don't know if I chanted these.
We did.
We chanted some stuff, but I don't think it was the sutras. It could have been. Who knows?
We chanted a lot of things, including the sutras.
Cool.
And I was like, what am I saying? They were like, it doesn't matter.
Don't worry about it.
But it does.
It does matter, though.
I kind of want to know.
So the sutras, again, came about around 400 CE. And this is also when the Eightfold Yoga or Raja Yoga begins, which is the eight limbs, which we will cover in a few weeks. Because right now you might be like, what? The fuck? What? Eightfold Yoga? Raja Yoga? Eight limbs? What?
We'll get there.
We're going to do a whole episode on these things, so don't worry about it. don't worry about it.
All you have to know for now is that
it existed.
That it existed. And that of those eight limbs, asana, or our physical practice, is only one limb.
Right.
So it's an eighth of this whole equation.
Which is the equation that gets you to enlightenment, supposedly.
Yeah. Yoga.
Yeah.
And the yoga lifestyle.
Right. And these were in...
Hashtag leggings.
Hashtag
messy hair. Don't care. That's not yoga, guys. Sorry.
No. I mean, it kind of is. It can be.
I'm sitting here. Oh, I just pulled this out of my sweater, and it's definitely your hair.
That is definitely my hair. That's a long brown hair.
I'm really jealous of it, actually.
Can I keep it. You want to put it on your head? There you go. Cool.
I just
it's beautiful. Did. Gorgeous. It's
sticking right up. Okay, let's keep going. So...
Who was Patanjali?
No one knows. He could have been a divine incarnation of a serpent god, or he could just be, like, a dude.
Or a woman.
Or a woman.
I thought
Patanjali was a woman when we were learning
about
it.
Oh, that's right. Yeah,
we
talked about this. Yeah. That's cool.
Jali sounds like
a woman.
Yeah, I don't know. And then I was like, oh. People say he. It's a dude. Okay.
I remember my one of my teachers in training always brought that up. Like, Patanjali could have been a woman.
Yeah.
And I was like, fuck yeah, she could have.
Yep.
Yeah.
There's no way to know.
No, you don't. We don't know.
Exactly. So what is a sutra?
I don't know. No one knows. No.
Everybody knows what a sutra is. Not everybody. But a sutra is an aphorism or a quick, like, to-the-point statement. So what Patanjali did... was not write all this information and create all this information. He or she
organized it, simplified it.
Yes, all the good stuff from the Vedas and the Upanishads into these short one sentence nuggets.
I like that.
Basically, that gives your yoga teacher yoga teacher training instructor something to make you memorize. Yeah.
Rude.
Yeah, rude.
Yeah. So just remember, Patanjali is the compiler. Compiler of knowledge, not the creator of the knowledge.
That's a real word, but it doesn't sound like
compiler.
It.
Compiler.
You said it right. It
compiler.
Just sounds
wrong. I need to stop saying it.
It sounds like a trash compactor. Like, can you throw that in the compiler, please? And
the
then
trash
you,
compiler.
You throw it in and it goes like, and chews up your garbage.
I mean, that's kind of what I mean. Like a
yeah.
compactor. He's the compactor
yes.
of the information.
It's the trash compactor. Well, it's not trash, though.
No.
We're getting really
It's not trash,
negative.
You guys.
Here.
It's not trash.
Patanjali.
Really important stuff.
It is. Patanjali basically compiled the entirety of yoga philosophy into 196 easily understood truths.
Quote unquote, easily.
Easily.
Because it's not easy.
Yes.
It's really hard to understand.
But it's just one sentence each. So.
Yeah. And each verse is a part of a whole. Or you can think about it like each verse is a thread in a giant woven fabric or like tapestry or whatever, blanket,
right.
you know.
So you need to know all of these 196 truths in order to get the full picture.
Do you know all 196 truths?
I know the first one.
Do you? I don't know any of them.
Atta yoga nushasanam. That's
oh,
it.
Oh, you're singing
yeah.
it. That's
we had
beautiful.
To learn it in song.
But do you know what that means or what it translates
that
to?
That means now is the time for yoga, I believe.
Oh, so that's how it starts?
Yeah.
Now is the time for yoga.
Yeah.
I like that.
And then there's something about something chittavritti nirodha, which is removing the restrictions.
Okay.
Yeah, we are definitely going to spend an episode on that and brush up.
I'm nervous for that one.
It'll be good.
So the sutras create a link between the teacher and the student, and this period marks more of the teacher-student relationship, more so than the other previous periods. So the sutras teach us how to reduce suffering through self-understanding and a peaceful mind. And Patanjali creates his own version of yoga with the Yoga Sutras, basically about the purity of the soul and the spirit and how this can be attained through the separation of a person's matter and spirit, which probably sounds very confusing. So I'm going to have Katie kind of clarify all of that for you.
So that is called dualism, and that's primarily what defines the classical period. So in dualism, there are two parts of an individual, the spirit or purusha and the body, prakriti. So each of us is made up of those two things. And in the classic period, these two things were thought to be completely separate entities. Even though they're separate, they do depend on each other. So you can't have a spirit without a body, because it would just be floating in space.
Right.
And you can't have a body without a spirit, because then you're just like a cockroach
shell.
Yeah. A conch shell. So they believed in the classic period that in order to be liberated from our suffering, we need to realize that these two parts of us are separate, and we need to identify less with our physical self and more with our spiritual self. To do that, we separate our identity from our thoughts via meditation. And then Patanjali says that this will give you superpowers, so, you know, it's kind of...
It's worth it.
It's totally worth it. I'm going to choose invisibility.
Ooh, I would choose the ability to fly.
Oh, shit. I want to change my... I also want to fly.
I would fly.
But I want to fly invisible.
No.
Why?
I don't know. That was mean. I'm sorry. You can fly invisible.
That's fine. You do your dreams. I'll do mine. We can never be roommates again.
Oh, no!
Yep, you've ruined it. So that is dualism.
Harsh.
So basically, if we wrap up all of the classic period, the focus is on the spirit instead of the material, realizing that there is separation in the two, but that they do need each other.
Codependent,
faux show.
Yeah. And
and yet also completely separate.
But also totally codependent.
And also totally separate.
And little side note, you guys, all of these sutras were supposed to be memorized.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was that's why we learned it in sing-song.
In sing-song.
Because that's how, you know.
It's a
how do you remember that? Even to this day, I have to be like, A, B, C, D, E, F, G.
Yeah, me too.
So that's why we learn things in sing-song.
I'm trying to remember the Schoolhouse Rock song for...
We the people in order to form a more perfect union. Is this copyright? Are we going to get sued?
Probably.
Okay.
We'll
we need to
now.
Sing less, not because we want to sing less, because we want to sing all the time. We want to sing the whole episode to you, but mm-hmm. we don't want to get sued.
Yeah. Next period.
Post-classical. The years are question mark.
Unknown.
After the classic period.
To 1893 CE.
Yep.
What does CE mean?
Current era.
Oh.
So a little side note.
Yeah.
We are not a faith-based show. So
correct.
We have no affiliations. We will be using BCE before current era and CE current era for all our episodes.
Yeah.
Although I don't think we'll be diving this deep in history in the future.
No.
But you know, we just believe in a context of the world at large, and especially when we're talking about yoga, we're not talking about a Western faith system
right
here. So we're not going to
Westernize it.
Yes, and circulate everything around BC and AD.
Yeah.
So.
Word. Anyways, back to post-classical.
Post-classical.
So post-classical focused on non-dualism in reaction to the dualism of the classical period. So kind of like a pendulum, it just swung the other way. gives up trying to liberate people from reality and teaches them how to accept it all and just live in the present moment.
So up until now, yoga was more about the spirit and divine energy. Previous generations of yogis didn't really pay much attention to the body. So they were more interested in the point of contemplation, to the point where they could exit the body consciously.
So meditation.
Yeah.
Again, back to meditation for the 100th time.
I'm piecing out of this skin shell.
It's pretty cool, though.
It is kind of cool.
Now, in the post-classical period, the yogis start focusing more on working to heal the body in order to prolong life. So it totally went the opposite direction. And this is when Hatha yoga is established. You want to talk about pronunciation?
Hatha?
Yes. Hatha versus Hatha?
So Hatha or Hatha yoga, it's pronounced the same way, and Anna and I both say it differently.
Yeah, I say Hatha.
We just want you guys to know it's spelled H-A-T-H-A. So if you see it, that's what we're talking about.
Yeah.
So anyway.
So I'm going to say Hatha. Katie's going to say Hatha.
Yes.
You do you, Bo.
You do you, Bo.
This is the type of yoga that most of us practice today. or like a version of it. Since our physical bodies are part of reality, we have the evolution of Tantra and Hatha yoga and asana. Again, asana is the physical practice of yoga. And this all becomes more important. Yoga is appreciated more for its physical benefits now, which is what we're familiar with.
Right. That's what we
here in the
mostly
West.
Think
yeah.
of as yoga.
Correct.
So now it's kind of the body. We start getting into the thought process of the body is your temple.
The body is a temple.
And it's your immortal spirit lives inside that temple. So it's not just a container that you get to like shed at the first opportunity. It's still important. It's still important to take care of that temple. And taking care of the body is how we awaken the Kundalini energy, which we'll talk about in another episode
yes.
as well. So that we can sit still in meditation to achieve that enlightenment still.
Right. So technically, you're supposed to practice asana or your physical practice first to prepare the body for meditation.
Correct.
I don't do that in my practice. I always meditate first.
Do you?
Mm-hmm. I always meditate first and then I do the physical practice.
You do?
So again, it's, you know, to each their own, right?
But in the post-classical period, they would have been like, bitch, please. Get on your mat. Actually, they didn't have mats.
Did they not have mats? They
no.
might have had mats. They might have had like...
They're like rugs.
Rugs?
Yeah.
Yoga rugs.
But I don't even think they always had rugs. That would be an interesting mini-sode.
Yeah, it would.
Yeah.
What did they use to practice on?
What did they wear before leggings?
Those like diaper things.
Oh, yeah. I could do that. I could definitely get into a diaper.
Who's that guy I did that workshop with that I can never remember his name over
Gary,
the summer?
Halpern?
Gary. Oh, Halpern.
Gabriel
Halpern. Yeah, he still wears those.
Really?
Oh my God. He like, yeah. In one of the, there was four workshops. And in one of the workshops, he like ripped off his pants and had on his little yoga diaper. And I just remember like being in a forward fold and being like, wait, is that happening right now? I like looked up and I was like, oh my God. His
hey,
little
man.
Old man legs are just coming
just,
at me.
Just the body.
Just the body.
Just the body.
Just a shell. Just a shell.
But it's a temple of a shell.
Yeah, it's your temple.
Yo temple. So wrapping up the post-classical period, the main thesis of this period is that instead of separating the body and spirit, now yoga tries to unite them in non, and that's an example of non-dualism.
Yeah, take care of your body.
Yes, and like all of, during this period, all of this like we are one kind of stuff comes out, so unity exists in everything in the universe. So it's not just about uniting the body and spirit, it's realizing that your body and spirit are also one with the rest of the universe. And it goes on to just reaffirm some of the teachings from the Upanishads.
Cool.
Cool.
Last and final period, you guys. Modern yoga.
Yeah.
Whew, 1893 to now.
Right now.
Right now. And again, that's a pretty, well, it's not like a super huge time period, but.
And we're just going to give you a little bit
yeah,
of,
a little blip.
Yeah, the transition into modern yoga.
Mm-hmm.
But it's such, so much progress has been made since 1893 that it warrants its own episode, which we'll do later. So
right.
This is just kind of the beginning of it.
So modern yoga started with this guy called Swami Vivekananda. May have heard of him. He gave a speech as a representative of Hinduism to the Parliament of World Religions held at the World's Columbian Exposition in Chicago in 1893. Chicago, woo!
And it's actually a funny little side note. It was the World's Fair. So, that's where, if you're familiar with Chicago, he was speaking in what is now the Art Institute of Chicago, which is kind of cool.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. It also means that while H.H. Holmes was like murdering tourists in his murder castle, Swami Vivekananda was solving world peace. So I guess that could
yin be. Yin and yang.
Yin and yang, universal balance.
Yin and yang, guys. Yes.
I guess we needed H.H. Holmes for Swami.
No.
No,
probably not.
He's just a shitty human being.
Terrible person.
Terrible person.
So this brought yoga out to the U.S. and the rest of the world. He made a big impression on the American public, and at the urging of his teacher, Ramakrishna, he found himself in the States, where he knew no one. And literally, thanks to some random people who saw him for what he was invited to give this speech. So he wasn't, like, initially invited to this. This is, like, super random.
He didn't have enough degrees.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I read that, like, they were looking for, like,
certified,
individuals.
Experts. Yeah.
Exactly.
So thanks to the universe, he ended up here, right? Maybe,
yep.
I guess.
Yeah.
Divine intervention.
Divine intervention.
If you want to believe that. Yeah, and that's why we have yoga in the West now.
Woo! Thanks, Vivekananda.
Thanks, dude.
You're the best.
Thank you. Yeah, so thanks to his success here, he opened the doors for others, and the stream of Eastern gurus continues to flow in today.
Cool. And that, my friends, is yoga history.
Or at least,
a iceberg tip of it.
Yeah, iceberg tip. Just the tip.
Just
the tip. Ooh, got weird.
Got real weird, guys. You don't even know. All right. So we hope that this is a little more clear. The history can be so overwhelming at first,
yeah.
But when you divide it into these four periods, it makes it a lot more manageable.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll kind of do a little wrap up in a minute here.
But yeah, so you might be like, well, who cares? Like, why do I need to know this?
Right. That's kind of what I'm.
Right. You're like, I'm still wondering that myself. But I just think that if you practice yoga, whether or not you're just starting or you're really serious about it, you practice every day or you teach, you need to know these things. It's like your family history. It's your lineage. You're a part of this big, beautiful thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, why
so
do we learn
it?
Why do we learn any history? We know if you're listening to us from the United States, which I'm assuming because it's our first episode,
yeah.
And I doubt we made it overseas yet.
Perhaps not.
But if you're probably listening to it from our hometown,
yeah.
You've learned U.S. history because it's important for your past. So
right.
Now that yoga is part of your life, it's also part of your past.
Correct.
So, yeah.
Congratulations.
Welcome to school.
Yes.
So, quick wrap up.
Mm-hmm.
This is, if you glazed over for the last 7 hours, it feels like, here's a quick wrap up. Four periods. Vedic.
Pre-classical.
Classical.
Post-classical.
In the Vedic period, that began with the Rig Veda, and it was said yoga at this point was basically about uniting the physical world with a divine world.
Then we have the pre-classical. The texts from this era are the Upanishads and the Bhagavad Gita. And these basically talk about that the self is the same as the universe. Meditate. This helps you explore the self, and then you can better understand the universe and its oneness.
Classical, marked by Patanjali's Yoga Sutras. And here we're talking about dualism. So there is separation between the physical self and the spirit self, and we need to identify less with our physical self than with our spirit self.
Post-classical. Asana! Woo! So now Tantra Yoga and Hatha Yoga are a thing. It started with only 16 poses, and did it really? That's interesting. Okay. Now we have a million. Instead of separating the body from the spirit, now yoga tries to unite them. This is non-dualism. We are one kind of stuff.
We are one.
We are one. Unity exists in everything, including the universe.
So the end goal of each of these periods was pretty much the same. They were all looking for enlightenment. They were all looking for the same thing. They just went about it in different ways.
Totally.
With different theories.
So it started by looking up to spiritual leaders, then within the self, then by following the Eightfold Path, and then finally through asana.
There you go.
That's it. That's all she wrote.
That's all she wrote.
Who the fuck is Swami Vivekananda? It's the guy we just mentioned.
Yes.
He's an Indian monk. He was born in 1863 and he died in 1902. Very young age.
Yes. He was young. Born Narendranath Datta was his original name. And he was born in Calcutta, India to an aristocratic family.
So he had money and then he didn't. His father was an attorney and his mom was a housewife. He studied Hindu scriptures, but he also studied works by Western philosophers. He was a very well-rounded individual.
He was. Yes. Very, very worldly. He studied under Ramakrishna Deva, who taught that all beings were the embodiment of the divine. So doing service to man equaled service to God. So he taught a service-based lesson, basically.
Okay.
When Ramakrishna got throat cancer, he asked Narendranath to take care of the other students, who then decided him to be their leader.
Oh, no pressure or anything?
No pressure. He was still a student at that time.
Oosh.
FYI.
Oosh.
Yes.
So eventually money ran out and he created like a ramshackle monastery for himself and the other students. And in 1886, he has his fellow students all take their monastic vows. And I said that right, right?
Yes.
Monastic.
And he takes his at the same time and he took the name Swami Vivekananda, which translates to the bliss of discerning wisdom. And he, from then on, became a wandering monk.
The wandering monk. He traveled around India and then to Japan, China, Canada, and then eventually he found his way to the U.S. where he represented Hinduism at the 1893 Parliament of World Religions, like we mentioned before, at what is now the Art Institute of Chicago at the World's Fair Exposition. Many call this the Sisters and Brothers of America speech, and he spoke of religious harmony. That line earned him 2 minutes of a standing ovation. That's a long standing ovation.
I know. Can you imagine? You're like,
no. I'd be like,
sisters and brothers. And everyone's like, woo! And then I get stage fright and I start to like.
Back into the curtains.
Disappear. Like, that was a short speech.
Yeah.
But it was actually a very long speech.
You know, you can listen to the speech online.
Yes, we will put that in our show notes.
Yeah. I didn't actually listen to it, but I found it.
I listened to a little bit of it.
Did
it's
you?
Kind of hard because it's such an old recording.
Yeah.
But you can also find the like written text as well.
Oh,
of
I
the
think
speech.
I would prefer that.
Yeah, it's long, but it's good.
I saw that the recording was like an hour. Night.
Yeah.
It's so a I was long like, speech. I'm not gonna listen to that right now.
It's really good though. He basically says we need to be understanding of each other's beliefs. And it's really cool. I like it. He traveled in the U.S. after that speech, setting up Vedanta centers to teach philosophy and yoga. So he really kind of proliferated yoga in the U.S. And then he eventually went back to India and founded a mission, a couple monasteries, a bunch of other stuff. He continued traveling until the 4th of July in 1902. When he died of a burst blood vessel while meditating.
That's crazy.
Right?
Yeah. His disciples believed it was due to his Brahmarandra, which is an opening in the crown of his head, being pierced when he attained Mahasamadhi. I can't say these words. So you can think of it like meditation, but deadly. If that makes you want to meditate now.
Yeah, no.
So they believe he was consciously shedding the body to gain full enlightenment. He's regarded as a saint in India, which is pretty cool.
Yeah. And his teachings promoted human development and promoted morality and celibacy. I mean, I can get on board with a couple of those.
Morality.
Human development.
Yeah. And human development.
And that's it.
I don't know about celibacy.
Yeah.
He emphasized the physical part of yoga while in the U.S., making it more accessible to Westerners and contributing to its popularity and spread.
He's credited for transcendental yoga in the West, and he helped reawaken India to Hindu spirituality. He's credited for bringing awareness to India's poverty situation and fueling change. He inspired Gandhi's love for his country. He inspired the independence movement that got them that got India their independence in 1947.
So he's pretty important.
Yeah.
Pretty important guy. Did a lot in his short time.
Well-renowned.
Well-renowned, yes.
And we have a nice little quote from him.
He said, "Take up one idea. Make that one idea your life. Think of it. Dream of it. Live on that idea. Let the brain, muscles, nerves, every part of your body be full of that idea. And just leave every other idea alone. This is the way to success. That is the way great spiritual giants are produced." Love, Vivekananda.
Love, Viv. So basically, being in the present and focusing on one thing. So thanks, Swami Vivekananda.
Thanks, dude. Yeah. Thanks for yoga.
Thanks. So this was a very long episode. Oof. This is probably the heftiest episode that we're going to do.
Yeah.
Thanks for sticking with us.
Yes,
we hope you got some information. And visit our website at WTFYogaPodcast.com for the show notes and sources. Email us any questions or comments at WTFYogaPodcast@gmail.com.
Mm-hmm.
We want to hear it all. So if you think we are dumb and miss something, just let us know.
Or if you think we did really good, let us know.
Yeah, we love those comments too.
We like even positive more. Comments too.
Yes.
All of the comments.
All of the comments.
Big relief.
Anything else?
No, that's
okay.
It. All well, right. Thanks, guys.
Bye.
Bye.
What the fuck?
Hey guys.
We hope you love what you hear on What the Fuck Yoga Podcast. If you do, please like and subscribe in iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or whatever platform you use to listen to your podcasts.
Also, follow us on Facebook and the Gram, aka Instagram. Send us your burning questions or comments to WTFYogaPodcast@gmail.com.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.